least our third time. We had a number of years ago, we had a series of Shirim in Muncie. I think we were here one other time, and this is our third time in Muncie. So we try to do what the Night Seder does locally. We try to do nationally, globally. Baruch Hashem, we've been in throughout the United States, northwest, Portland, Oregon, to northeast, Boston, Massachusetts, to Florida, Los Angeles, in the southwest. We have the covet of having Rabbi Jurevel here today, who's one of the greatest experts in kashrus, literally we could say in the whole world. He was in Ottawa for the Ask OU program. We had in Toronto and Montreal. We had a Skype series to Australia, to the Kotel there, a 10-part series. So we try to do nationally, globally, what the Night Seder does here locally for Muncie, that everybody in Muncie is aware of Night Seder, all their terrific programs. Right now, we were supposed to be in the Beis HaMedrash, but they started a new program for Bein HaZman and for Bacharim, tremendous Kol Torah upstairs. So we're down here. But Mir Tzashem, we hope the Olam will be Moisav HaHoylech, will grow, and we have the schus to have someone who was Mishamish Rav Belsky, I think it was for 8 years, if I'm not mistaken. And there was a tremendous klop to the OU, to the Olam HaTorah, Olam HaKashrus, when Rav Belsky was Nifter. Our speaker, our Magid Shir, Rabbi Eli Gersten, was literally a lifeline because he knew the Psakim. We have the Psakim of Rav Belsky computerized. I just heard this Friday, I don't think it's a secret, the OU has been looking for someone, and as everybody can imagine, it's Rav Belsky is irreplaceable, but the OU is going to begin, besides that they have Rav Herschel Schechter, Rabbi Ginnak, but they also have Rav Usher Weiss and Eretz Yisrael for difficult shilas, but they're also going to begin to consult on different shilas with Harava Goyen Rav David Feinstein Shlita. So that certainly will be a terrific chizuk for the psak in the OU. But in the meantime, we rely a tremendous amount on Rav Eli Gersten. He will be speaking to us today on medications and kashering b'nogea to Pesach. It's a schus to introduce Rav Eli Gersten Shlita. One last thing, there's cards. If anybody wants to ask a question, the way we do it is you can write your question down. We won't have time probably to answer all your questions here. Any question that's not answered in public, we will contact you from the OU with the answer. Also, we have in the back OU directories. We have a large supply, so if you want to take for other people who need it, please feel free to take as many as you want.
I was asked to speak about these two topics, about kashering and medicines. Comes to kashering, I think one of the most confusing and difficult parts of kashering has to do with kashering an oven. I think most of the other parts, people are a little bit more self-understood about why we kasher them, how we kasher them. When it comes to ovens, there seems to be a lot of confusion, a lot of different ways that people do it, and I'd like to clarify some of the aspects that are negeya to kashering ovens. First question, of course, is, well, what type of kashering should one do on one's oven? Does it need a libun chomer? Does it need a libun kal? Maybe you can make an argument it doesn't need to be kashered at all. Okay, so look in the Shulchan Aruch, it talks about right in the beginning of Siman Tov and Aleph, Hilchos Hagalos Kelim for Pesach. One of the first sifim over there, Sif Beis, already talks about something called a kubya. And the Mechaber over there says a kubya, which was it's a kli cheres, it was made out of earthenware, and it was a type of oven that they used to have. And the Mechaber says, the Shulchan Aruch says it has to be kasher with libun gomer. You fill it with coals, and that's how you kasher it. But the types of ovens that they dealt with, first of all, this oven was made out of cheres, it was made out of earthenware. And second of all, they used to bake directly against the surface of their ovens. If you think of like a pizza oven today, where we slide the dough right onto the oven, they used to either put the dough against the walls of the oven or they used to put on the floor of the oven. They did cook also in pots. They did definitely cook that way too. They used to roast inside their oven as well. But one of the ways they used to cook was directly against the surface of the oven. So there's no question then, whenever you have direct contact, especially with chametz, against the direct contact against any surface when you cook, it needs libun gomer. But we don't cook like that in our ovens. Nobody puts bread against the sides of the oven. No one even puts food directly on the grates of the oven. We cook always inside of pots and pans. So nothing really touches against the sides of the oven. Okay, there are spills. We'll talk about that in a minute. But that's the derechla. We don't cook against the oven. The other way we cook in an oven is you put liquid items in there. Let's say cake batter. Let's say it's a liquidy cake batter. We bake cakes inside our oven. When you bake inside an oven, it produces zeya. It produces steam. The steam goes up, goes all around the oven. Okay, there's a machlokes amongst Paiskim today, even 100 years ago, whether is there a concern in our ovens for what we call zeya, for steam. We know that zeya from a food has the din of the food itself. Zeya from chametz has the din of chametz. If chametz is mazia against a pan or a surface that's right on top, if I put it in the cake, that's a liquid batter, and we see that it steams up against the top of the pan, it needs to be kashered. But practically speaking, do our ovens have zeya? This is an old machlokes. Moshe Feinstein in the Gris Meisha writes that yes, they do. He says our ovens do have zeya in them. We do have to be concerned about zeya. There are other paiskim who say Meshem Ravon Kotler Zatzal, that he held that there was no zeya in our ovens. Our ovens are very hot. You don't see any steam inside of them. So even though you put liquid items inside of it, and even though they do seem to steam up, the steam disperses right away. They're vented. The steam doesn't build up inside of the oven. So this is a difference of opinion, how we deal with our ovens. Do they have an issue of zeya or not? Okay, so if you don't bake directly against it and there's no issue of zeya, so then what is exactly the problem? There's a third issue, though. There's something called recha. Recha is if I roast inside of my oven, so that creates... It creates aroma, it's a type of steam also, but it's much less so. It's not something that you could see, but it's something that you could smell. It's called recha. If I were to cook treif in my oven, I was to roast a piece of meat, let's say it doesn't produce zeya. When you roast meat, it's not very liquid. It's basically a solid, it's a davar gush, but there's recha. You're not supposed to roast at the same time kosher and treif in your oven. But Maisa we paskin, Recha lav milsahi, that if you did, the food is mutter b'dievet. Not supposed to do it, but it's mutter b'dievet. What happens if a person roasted treif in their oven? Okay, there was no zeya, nothing touched, nothing spilled. Do you have to kasher the oven, or can you use it right away afterwards for kasher? So it says in the Ramah brings in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kuf Ches, that zeacher zeh, it's mutter. We're not choshish for Recha, zeacher zeh. So again, even, let's say a person even baked chametz in their oven. They bake the cake, they bake bread. Let's say bread is a pretty much dry item. Mm-hmm. They bake the challah dough. So it produces recha. You walk into the house, when a person's baking bread, you smell it, right? There's recha in the house. There's certainly recha in the oven. But technically speaking, you wouldn't have to kasher from recha. Pais could say that if it were to touch against the sides of the oven, that would be a problem. It's only that recha doesn't bring back recha. So if you cooked into his recha, so maybe a person should kasher l'chatchila in case something were to touch the sides of the oven. He should kasher with a libun, maybe he should do a libun kal in that case. But really, the oven, certainly it wouldn't be a problem. So again, if the food doesn't touch the sides of the oven, if there would be no zeya in our ovens, and the only concern for ovens would be recha, really the need to kasher our ovens would only be a chumrah. Okay, but I think most people do follow the psak of Moshe Feinstein, that we are chayshish for zeya in our ovens. And even if you don't, even if you're chayshish just for spills inside the oven, okay, that's the Maisa today. We have not. We all go to clean our ovens before Pesach. We all know that things spill. Right? You see how coated things are. They splatter. They spill. You put things in. You take things out. Things spill. So, yeah, what's the din of a spill inside of an oven? So in truth, where does things spill? Let's say they spill down onto the floor of the oven. Okay, so there's a blia down on there's something absorbed. There's a blia in the bottom of the oven. But what brings back that, what is going to attach that back to my food? How is that going to get absorbed back into the food that I cook inside the oven? So if I have an issue, if we hold that there's zeya in our ovens, if we say that our ovens, they fill up with steam, then that steam will act as a chibur, will act to attach the food back with what's absorbed into the walls and sides of the oven. If a person doesn't have zeya, and if they say, I'm only going to cook dry items in my oven, or let's say I'm going to cover everything before I put it into my oven. I put aluminum foil over all the pans before I put them in my oven. There's no zeya inside the oven. Then there's nothing attaching back. It's true, there's that spill. Okay, I have to clean it out. I don't want it to be cooking at the same time. I don't want there should be recha of the chametz in my oven at the same time as there's food cooking in my oven. By Pesach, we're machmer even for a kol shehu. So even a little bit of recha, we're machmer even more so for Pesach than we are the rest of the year. So for Pesach, we do say recha is milsa. But if I clean up that recha, so I get it out, I take a steel wool or something, I clean the oven well, what's the need to kasher the oven? Why am I kashering my oven? So again, the ikar need to kasher the oven is going to be the racks that actually the food sits on. Okay, that's going to be more of a problem because the pan is actually going to touch against that. And if there would be a spill or some liquid on the bottom of my pan when I put it into the oven, we'll say that it will absorb from the rack that it sits on. But what falls onto the sides of the oven or it falls down onto the bottom of the oven, the spills, as long as I clean it very well, on the one hand, you could make an argument that there's no need to kasher it at all. And many people, therefore, are mekel, they will kasher their oven with what we call a libun kal. They'll turn their oven up to 550, they'll let it burn itself out for an hour, they'll say that burns out the blias in the oven, and therefore nothing really touches my oven. I don't really have zeh in my oven. The recha is gone because I cleaned it out. Nothing's touching against the place where I'm baking. I only bake inside of pans in my oven. And therefore there's an argument that's made that it's enough to kasher an oven with what we call libun kal, which we call burning out the oven at the highest temperature. But according to Moshe Feinstein, the Igros Moshe, that there's zeh in the oven, the zeya is going to bring back any spills, any splatter that happened against the walls of the oven. Against the wall of the oven was direct contact between the food between the chametz and the food and the oven. Those areas, l'chara, need libun chomer to kasher them. So if a person is chayshish for this, so one of the ways we accomplish this today is we use what we call a self-clean oven. That's the simplest way to kasher an oven. For those who have self-clean ovens, they've become standard now. People, in fact, they go to buy an oven, they make sure it has that feature, self-clean oven. Everyone wants to have a self-clean oven. Because then you could accomplish by kashering your oven with libun gomer. Now, before we make that jump to say that you've accomplished that, let's investigate, let's see, when I turn my oven on to self-clean, did I really accomplish a libun gomer? What is required for a libun gomer? Shulchan Aruch gives the description of libun gomer as nitzaisis nitzizin. Okay, it begins to, when you heat it with a coals or a torch, to the point where it begins to spark. You have sparks shooting out of it. I've never seen this accomplished. I'm sure those who maybe use a roofer's torch or something can really get those type of temperatures. But it, certainly when you self-clean your oven, you're not going to have any sparks flying. I've never seen that happen. The Gemara actually gives a different lashon. This lashon of Nitzaisis Nitzisin comes from the Yerushalmi. The Gemara Bavli of Adizara has a different definition. It's Tashir Klipa. You heat it up until the metal begins to peel. Again, I've never seen that. It doesn't happen with our ovens. Our ovens are also coated with enamel. So you're not going to get any peeling or any burning away of the metal, because they're covered with this enamel coating, which protects the metal. Which brings up another question also, which is, if I do want to kasher my oven, if it's covered in enamel, so do we kasher enamel at all? What is the status of enamel? So enamel, it was an old shaila how we dealt with these metal enamel pots. The Chasam Sofer discusses it. What's the status of that enamel? Does it have a din of cheres? Does it have a din of schuchis? Maybe it has a din of, maybe it's bottled to the metal and it's considered all to be part of the metal itself. I remember Belsky used to say maybe it has a din of clay even, because the material that they make it out of has a stone, basically. It's not made out of clay. Cheres means clay. You took from the bottom of a riverbank, you pull up clay. That's what clay cheres is. If you take these different materials that they use to form this enamel coating, it's more daima to stone. Okay, so anyway, it's always been it was a suffix how it was made. It's a suffix in terms of the halachas and in terms of the metzias. In fact, not any two enamels are probably made the same. There's so many different patents and so many different ways that they make these enamel different enamel coatings that they put onto different surfaces, that you'd have to have a separate psak at every single one. So this begins to now confuse the issue. What is the how do we kasher our ovens? If our ovens are cheres, does it even help to kasher it with a self-clean oven? Let me just back up a step. What is the issue with cheres? So we mentioned before, if you have a kubya, which is made out of cheres, that's a real earthenware oven. So the way you kasher it is you fill it with coals. The Mechaber in the previous sif, in Tafnan Aleph Sif Aleph, mentions that you can't kasher clay cheres. The only thing you could do if you needed to kasher clay cheres would be to return it back into the potter's kiln. The kiln that forges it, that formed it to begin with, that's the only way you wouldn't help even to do a Libun Gomer by cheres. You need this hotter temperature called Hachsaris Kivshin, for turning it back into a kiln. But the truth is that this is a chumrah that the Gemara creates, that you need to do Dafka Hachsaris Kivshin, because we're afraid of Dilma Pakai, that it might, if I try to fill it up with coals and do a regular Libun Gomer on it, it might cause the Kli Cheres to crack. It might not be able to withstand those type of temperatures. So you tell you, if it can't withstand that temperature of a filling with coal, certainly it won't be able to withstand the temperature of a Hachsaris Kivshin, if we're turning it into an even hotter temperature. So that's exactly the point. The point was, they were afraid that if a person were to try to fill it with coals, they'd get nervous. They'd see it getting so hot, they're afraid it's going to explode. They would quickly dump out the coals and they'll say, okay, I'm done. It's enough. Even though they didn't heat it up enough, they'll try to cut their losses and try to do it very quickly. Mashenkein, if a person puts it back into a potter's kiln, we say that the person gives up all hope. It's either going to crack right away or else it'll be fine. So there's no gzeir, there's no chshash of Dilma Pakai. So the truth is, the Shulchan Aruch writes that when it comes to this kubya, we're not concerned that a person is going to pull out the coals early, because this is the way you kasher it all, this is the way you use it all the time. People always fill it with coals. It's meant to be filled with coals. So a kli cheres, which is meant to be filled with coals, can be kashered with a simple libun gomer of what we defined earlier, of either nitzaisis nitzisin or mashir klipa, which we haven't said exactly what temperature that is, but that's what it is. If I fill it with coals, that's the example that the Mechaber gives of how to accomplish this type of a temperature, of this type of a kashering. In this case, we're not concerned that a person is going to break, that the person is going to pull it out early, because it's built for this. It's made to be able to withstand this type of temperature. Okay, so a oven today is the same thing. Our ovens are, even if you hold that the coating on the oven is made of cheres, you say that enamel has a din of cheres, but it's meant to withstand the self-clean temperature. I don't know anybody who has a self-clean oven who had the problem that their oven cracked because they ran a self-clean cycle. There are other problems that come up when you run a self-clean cycle. Sometimes it stops, the oven malfunctions, it stops working. Very common issue, but before Pesach, people try to kasher your oven, they have to call the repairman afterwards. But the issue that it, that it cracks the cheres, I don't think anybody ever has that problem. So since it's made for this purpose, it works. It's fine. However, the Shulchan Aruch writes there's another problem over there. It's in this same sif over there, Tofnan Alf, Sif Beis, by Kuvia, the Shulchan Aruch says you have to fill it in the inside with coals. It's not enough to fill it on the outside with coals. Even though the normal way that you, the normal hesek, the normal way that I light my, that I heat up my oven is there'd be a section on the bottom of the oven, and I'd insert the coals in there, and that would heat up the oven, and I'd put my food inside the oven, but I don't put coals inside my oven. I put the coals underneath my oven. But that's called hesek bibachutz. If I put the coals on the bottom and the food goes in, let's say I put the piece of the bread, I put it right on onto the floor of the oven, the bliya from the into the oven is coming from the top down in, and the coals are heating it from the bottom on up. And the Mechaber says that that's no good. It has to be, you have to be pilot the bliya the same way that it went in. So even though we're doing over here libun, we're not really doing over here agala. So usually the rules of Kabbalah kach polta don't really apply. But the Mechaber says, even still, you have to be piloted the derech that the bliya, it's the Gemara. The Gemara in Psachim, Daf Lamed, says you have to be piloted the derech that the bliya went in. So if you fill it with coals, so then the coals are now in the same place where the bread was. Where the bread was sitting against the, on the floor of the oven, that area I now have to fill with coals. If I put the coals underneath, so the heat now has to penetrate through the cheres to get up to burn out that the top of the cheres. No, that's not good enough. So, okay, so this brings up a question with our self-clean ovens. Where exactly is the heating element? Is this considered a hesek bibachutz or a hesek bibefnim? Even if I light the up to such high temperature, and let's assume there for a minute that the temperature of self-clean oven is hot enough to be a libun gomer, but is this considered a hesek bibachutz or a hesek bibefnim? Is the fire on the bottom? There's a metal pan that has holes in it that lets the heat go through. And then there's the food which is dripping, which dripped down. All the things that spilled fell down onto the other side of the metal, on the other side of the pan. So maybe that's not considered hesek. Maybe that's considered a hesek mibachutz, not a hesek mibefnim. The Paiskim already deal with this shaila. There's a Tshuvas Avnei Nezer that discusses this question regarding the way their ovens used to work. They used to also have this issue that their ovens, the fire was on the bottom, and then the food was cooked inside. But they didn't have this kubia, which was made of cheret. They had metal ovens. So by metal ovens, the Avnei Nezer says that if you get it to the point where the metal begins to glow, you heat it to the point where the metal is already red hot, the metal itself has a din of a gachelis. It becomes a gachelis through and through. So he says that can't be the case. That's not the situation that the Mechaber is talking about. The Mechaber is talking about a kli cheres. A kli cheres doesn't glow when you heat it up to libun gomer. If you want to get it to glow, you have to heat it in, you have to do a hachsaris kivshin. You have to put it back into the potter's kiln. I think cheres glows at something like 1400 or over 1400 degrees to get it to glow. But a libun gomer, we're going to assume, let's say, is about 850, 900 degrees. Is when I fill it with coals, that's how hot it'll get. So it's you're not getting the cheres to glow when you fill it up with coals. But yet that's enough. I did a libun gomer on it. But that's not enough if I have to have a hesek, if I need hesek bibifnim. If I need to have it the same direction as the bliya went in, so then there's a chatzitza, there's a piece of earthenware that's blocking between the coal and the way the bliya went in. But in our oven, says the Avnei Nezer, which are metal, probably had cast iron or something oven. So he says in that case the whole metal gets red hot. Then there's no chatzitza. It doesn't make a difference whether the red hot, if the coal will be on the top or the coal's on the bottom. The whole thing is red hot. So therefore, the whole thing is kashered. Now, in our ovens, we have this question back, though, because our ovens are not metal through and through. There's an enamel coating on it. And if we said that the enamel coating has a din of cheres, maybe, so then maybe that's a hefsik between the way the metal gets red hot. But what about that coating on the top? That's not getting red hot. Is that really getting a libun gomer? So maybe that's still a question. Maybe I'm not doing, even if I do a self-clean oven, the hesek is maybe on the bottom. Now the truth is, A lot of self-clean ovens, I believe they have two fires in them. There's a fire on the top of the oven, and there's a fire on the bottom. And both fires go on when you run the self-clean cycle. It's like a broil feature, and there's the normal fire when you bake, which is on the bottom. And so you have really fires both on the top and on the bottom. So I think most self-clean ovens actually work that way. So you have both a hesek mibechutz and mibefnim when you run the self-clean oven. So really, in truth, it's not really a question. But I saw the Sefer Truas Shai, he actually discusses this with the ovens ready in his day. They had this enamel coating on them. And he says it also, it's still mutter. He says, since it's such a very, very thin coating, that cheres, that enamel coating, it's, I forget the numbers what they are, but it's, maybe it's a millimeter or something in thickness, the whole enamel that's put onto the metal. Very, very thin coating. So he says, first of all, it's not clear that it's cheres. It might be considered glass. And glass is a whole shaila in and of itself, even though we're machmer, the Rama is machmer, that we don't kasher glass for Pesach. But it's a shaila. There are many rishonim that hold that not only can you kasher glass, but the glass isn't even balea at all. So we're machmer that glass is considered to be like cheres. But again, cheres, we said, does help to do a lib megomer. The problem over here is only that I'm doing a hefsek mibechutz and not mibefnim. So the Teshuva Shai says that since it might not be a problem at all, since the glass may not even be balea, and since it's so thin, many paiskim are mekel even for year-round to do hagala on these. Mishra Brura brings it as well, that the Mishra Brura at the end of Siman Tafnun Aleph, he brings it actually in a later footnote. It's like there's like a little asterisk almost the very end of Tafnun Aleph, and the Rama says that the minig tid of the Rabbanim is that we do kasher these paths because we consider it only to be a mashahu, that the thickness of that enamel. So he writes over there also that you could kasher it with libun. Many people bring up the question: what about the glass door itself? Okay, the glass door is not a thin layer of glass. It's thick. It's a whole layer. It's a whole panel of glass in the door. I know many people get very caught up with this issue of the glass door, and they'll cover the door with aluminum foil. If a person wants to do that, it's fine. There's obviously no problem. It's an easy thing to do. So if a person wants to cover their door with aluminum foil, they're certainly entitled to do so. But Meikar Edin, again, it's not going to be a problem. It's not going to be a problem, first of all, because our glass door, our ovens, our self-clean cycles have a fire on the top as well, at least the ones I've seen do. So therefore, you have the temperature of the Libun Chomer inside the oven as well. And besides, we have this Truah Shai, the glass, anyways, we could be more makel. Rebelsky Zatzal held he didn't have to be machmer on the glass. He used to say, well, the whole issue that we're being machmer about is because of Zaya. He says the whole issue isn't so clear why it's a chumrah to begin with, so to speak, that we're kashering our ovens like we started off with. I'd say we shouldn't do it. Of course, we need to kasher them, but it really there's no contact between the food and the glass. So in order to have a problem, we have to say that it was mazia to the point that the zeya got onto the glass and then came back onto my food. So the whole thing is a little bit of a question whether there is even an issue to begin with. And so, plus, you have a suffix where the glass is even balei at all. And plus we're doing this libun chomer on it, so to be so machmer on it to say that I have to cover the glass. He held that you did not have to cover the glass. But I know many people feel that they should and they like to do so, and that's their chomer for Pesach to do so. So absolutely, people should continue to do so if that's what they like to do. But Rebelsky used to point out that when you're going to kasher an oven with a libun gomer, with a self-clean cycle. He used to say, why is that considered a libun gomer? You don't see the nitzitzis nitzis in that, you don't see. You don't see the hasharis klipa, you don't see. Do you say that it glows like a gacheles? Maybe it glows a little bit. Maybe you can get it if you dimmed all the lights and you turned everything off. Maybe you could see some sort of a dim glow. I'm not sure. But he used to say that when it gets to such high temperature, he would say our metals are made, like we said, they're coated in enamel, they're not going to have these different, you're not going to see the glowing, you're not going to see the peeling of the metal. But he say when you finish a self-clean cycle, you see that all the dirt that's on there, everything is burnt off to the point that there's nothing, it leaves white ash. All the ban is completely gone. It's like it's a new oven. That's what they call self-clean. So So you say that's yeah, so that takes care of the so Hrabowski held that when you run a self-clean cycle, that's the equivalent of a Libun Kamer. It wasn't only his opinion. He said that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Tzatzal, and many other of the Gedolim of the earlier generation, last generation, held like this, that a self-clean cycle, because of the high heat and the duration of time. People ask, my oven got to 900 degrees and then it shut off. Well, they don't know if it even got to 900 degrees, whatever it is. They ran the self-clean cycle halfway in the middle. They say it turned off on them. Is that adequate? So from what I understood from Belsky's Etzal was that's not really adequate. In order to be considered a Libun Gomer, you really have to let it go through the whole cycle till the point where it burns it all off and gets it all to be white ash. Like we mentioned earlier, if you were to stop the process early, if I were to fill it with coals and then dump them out quickly because I'm afraid that it didn't do it's going to break, so then that's not adequate. You didn't kasher it. You need to leave the coals in there for a certain amount of time until they're able to do what they need to do, to be able to burn out all the ban that's in there. Same thing today with our self-clean ovens. They need to be able to go through the whole cycle in order to be able to accomplish what they need to do. So a person doesn't have a... if it cuts out on them in the middle, they really should have it fixed and then redo it again. I just wanted to also speak a little bit about medications. In the OU guide to Pesach, on page 102, it gives you the OU guidelines for medicines. These were written up by Hrabowski Zatzal. They're originally written by him. Every year we'd bring it back to him and he would edit it. He'd make this correction, that change. He's another little knetch, another hisafa. But these were gone over by him, dozens of times. It's the same guidelines that are printed year to year to year. So I just want to point out a few nekudas just to be masber about them. Okay, it's all in the guidelines, but I just like to speak out just to be madgashit, because we get so many calls on this basic point, which is just so a little bit so obvious, which is that if someone is chas v'shalom a chayel sheyesh bei sakana, they are permitted to take any medicines on Pesach, and they should not switch or change anything without asking their doctor. We get so many calls in to the OU hotline about different heart medications and very serious medications that people are taking, and they're asking, does it have chametz in them? I mean, before you ask, does it have chametz in it, maybe ask your doctor if you need to take it. If you need to take it, there's no question that you need to, and switching these medications is not a simple issue. Once a person's on a medicine, they should stick with that medicine. So, it's nice the person wants to know if it has actually any chametz. They need to be really concerned about it, but the maisa is that it doesn't make a difference. The main guideline, that the main nekuda over here, is that pills, creams, non-chewable pills, injections may be owned, used, and consumed on Pesach for anybody. Okay, pills, Hrabowski Zatzal held the nifsal me'achila. If anyone ever bites into a pill, they know just how bad tasting they are. They're not considered food items at all. And therefore, it's mutter to take them on Pesach, even a chayla she'im bei sakana, even just the person that has a headache, they want to take a Tylenol on Pesach, it's mutter to do, but they should take the ones that are pills. They shouldn't take a liquid Tylenol, they shouldn't take a chewable Tylenol, they shouldn't take one that's coated with a flavored glaze on them, like some of them have. They have like a little bit of a candy coating on them. A person should just get the regular Tylenol-type pills that are... there are ones that are, they're called enteric coated, which is like a plastic film that's on there. Those are not a problem at all. That's not a problem. So you can get, if it says coated, the only person shouldn't get all nervous that it's a problem. Coated, when we're talking about here, coated, we're talking about they're coated with like a candy. People recognize them. They have sometimes like a reddish, glossy, candy-like coating on them. Those are the ones that a person should try avoiding. This is based on the idea, where does this come from, that all pills are not a problem? Even if there would be chametz in them, again, I'm not getting into what the ingredients are that might be a problem for chametz. It's probably, most of the cases, there's probably no chash chametz in them anyways. But even if there would be chametz in them, so there's a concept that if you're irav by davar mar, if you mixed in with other very bitter ingredients that make it unpalatable, So then that's what's called shaloi kederech achilasai. Then the food is if you swallow, you eat such a food that's so bad tasting, so then that's shaloi kederech achilasai. Shaloi kederech achilasai, though, is only mutter for a chayla she'im by sakana. So a person is a chayla, a person they have to go to bed, they're not feeling well, they have the flu. Maybe flu is even a chayla she'im by sakana. But okay, but they have whatever, they have a, you know, bad stomach ache. They could take medicines that are irav by davar mar. They have a bitter ingredient mixed into them. But then there's a higher level, which is nifsal me'achila. And the Chazon Ish explains that if you mix in the davar mar in a way that it cannot be removed, it becomes part and parcel of the product. There's no way to extract out that davar mar again. It's not like I put in a bitter item and then I could sift it out, or I can. If it's cooked, it's moved, it's completely muruv, it's completely mixed in to the point where there's no way to extract it anymore. At that point, the item is not considered just irav by davar, it's considered nifsal me'achila. And if it's nifsal me'achila, then it's mutter even if a person's not a chayla. The only problem is, the only time you're not allowed to take such an item on Pesach is if a healthy person eats it just for enjoyment, then we say there's an issue of achshavei. Person eats something which, even if he burns up his chametz before Pesach, we say charchai kaidem zman. A person chars his chametz, he takes it to beer chametz, and then he wants to, you know, he wants to be silly or something. He tries eating up the charred the ashes. He's not allowed to do that. The Rosh writes that you're not even charchai kaidem zman. You can't eat it on Pesach because of achshavei. By eating up those ashes, you're showing that you consider it still to be food, and we don't consider it therefore to be nifsal me'achila. But if a person if a person's taking it for refuah, he's not taking it to show that it's food. So Moshe Feinstein and others, they all write that anything that's taken for refuah, you don't say achshavei on such an item. So therefore, all the pills, Moshe has a tshuva also about creams. He writes that creams, a person has an ointment they need to take on their skin. So people are concerned, what about sicha kishtia? Sicha kishtia means that it has a din of it's like you're drinking. So maybe that should be a concern. He says, no, sticha kashtia is only a concern if you do it letainuk. If you were to put this cream on because it's like an oil or something to soften your skin, to make it more enjoyable, that's an issue of sticha kashtia. But if a person has a cream that they use for medicinal purposes, they have a rash, they have a eczema or something, and they need to, the cream doesn't make their skin feel better per se, but it takes care of the sickness, it deals with it, then that's permitted. And he says it's not a problem of getting hana from chametz on Pesach, either not, because it's nifsal me'achila. Nifsal me'achila is mutter. Just one last point, when it comes to medicines, normally we say that there's a higher level that we need for Pesach. It needs to be nifsal me'achila's kelev, not enough to be nifsal me'achila's adam. But when it comes to medicines and the like, where we say you can't use, the reason why we need nifsal me'achila's kelev is because of after lechamea by yisus acheres, we say a person could use that. Let's say a person has a piece of old dough or a piece of old bread, stale bread, which is not say it's no longer edible. A person could use it though to ferment future breads, but things like medicine, which are not usable in any form, there's no problem. Not a problem of chameya ba'isis acheres. All it needs to be is that lower level of nifsal me'achilas ha'adam. So all our medicines qualify, all these pills qualify for that level, and therefore it's not a problem. Even if a person is not a chayla she'ein ba'isaka, even if a person is not, he just has a headache, it's permitted to take all the types of pills. That was the psak of Rabelsky. So. Sure.
Both the kashering and medication. We have a few questions. The first one is, I bought a new house. Do I have to kasher my granite and sinks because maybe one of the workers ate a sandwich and washed his hand over the sink and granite using very hot water?
Okay, I mean, the general rule is that the person doesn't have to be chayshish for chashashas that are unrealistic, that a person, you know, have to make up a scenario in order to kasher something. So if a person knows that the workers ate chametz in the sink and they washed it, they saw them washing with hot water, okay, then they absolutely have to kasher. I think in general the workers would not use boiling hot water to wash their hands. Hopefully they do wash their hands, but I don't know if they use such hot water. A person doesn't have to be chashash. That's not a normal use for a sink. So, they're making up that such a thing happened is not a...
Someone asked, how do you kasher a glass cooktop?
Yeah, so that's an interesting problem, because glass, like we mentioned earlier, we don't kasher. That's the Rama says, we don't kasher glass. For Sfaradim, it would actually be the opposite. Sfaradim would say that there's no need to kasher it, because glass, you just wipe it clean and that's it. It's good to go. But for Ashkenazim, the Rama says that we don't kasher glass at all. So even though we mentioned earlier, really, on one hand, there's no need to kasher. If I wiped it clean and I put a dry pot on there, there would be no bliya between the glass and the pot. Unfortunately, we know that the metzias is that there are spills all the time on our stovetops. And if on Pesach we're going to have a spill, you're going to end up with liquid on the bottom of my pot between my glass and my metal and my pot, and that's going to be a problem. And even though the stovetop is Eina Ben Yomo, wasn't used in 24 hours, that's not a heter for Pesach. For Pesach, even Eina Ben Yomo is a problem. So there's really no good etza on how to kasher a glass top. What the OU suggests is that a person buys a metal disc. Or like a small blech, and puts it underneath their pan, even an aluminum pan, something to go underneath there. And that's the case. Even if there'd be a spill, there wouldn't be a direct contact between the pot that you're cooking in and the stovetop. There'd always be another hefsek in between. There'd be something blocking. So a person has a glass top stove. We don't recommend covering the entire surface. That could cause too much heat build up, and they could cause it to crack. But just like you could put a pot on top of the stove, you could put also first the metal disc and then like a blech, and then you put the pot on top. Same thing you would do, I guess, on Shabbos. If a person wanted to leave their chont on the stove, they'd put a blech there and put it on top. They should do the same for the whole Pesach.
Okay, Rav Gerstein spoke about self-cleaning ovens, so we had a question here. Someone's lock on the self-cleaning feature, it broke, and the self-cleaning option doesn't work. So his question is, what degree is hot enough, and for how much time should the oven be at that temperature to consider the oven kosher for Pesach use?
Right, so like we discussed, if a person, many people, before they had self-clean ovens, I think many people were makel to use just what we call the Liebman Kal, which is that you heat up the oven to the highest heat, about 550, for an hour. And if you cleaned it out well, again, you don't have the self-clean, the nice feature of the self-clean, which burns out all the ban, all the residue that remains. You have to do a very good job of cleaning it first. That becomes the main job. So you should use like a caustic cleanser, something like an easy off that will clean it, or it'll be paigim it, or make it ruined. Make sure to do the good job of cleaning it before Pesach, and then you burn it out. Some people, if they want to be more machmer, they want to try to be mekayim like a libum gomer, what they could do is they could line it with like aluminum foil. If you cover not just the door, but you can cover the floor of the oven, the walls of the oven with aluminum foil, especially the floor where the spills are, like we said before, that would be the main part where they might need Liebman Gummer, then they've accomplished even better than doing just the Liebman Kal. They've actually covered it, so then it doesn't really need to be kashered at all. But many people are lenient. They do just the Liebman Kal on their ovens, and that's also sufficient.